Go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Addicts Advocate. I'm your host, Dusty Dean, and it's my pleasure to welcome back Counselor Mike. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, Dusty. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you know, it's always a pleasure. You have a wealth of knowledge in all things recovery and addiction related, and I'm grateful that you have the time this evening to spend with us. One of the things that you and I had talked about in the past was the five stages of change, and I think that they're profound. I think it's something that we need to really get a grasp of, because when you're living it, especially the early stages of change, it can be scary. It can be daunting, and you feel like there's, you know, something inherently wrong with you, whether it be willpower, whether it be, you know, just I've got a defunct brain. And so I want to kind of dispel some of these myths. I want to let people understand, you know, where they're at in the grand scheme of, you know, their recognition of an addiction, if they have one, and how they go about getting help. So I'm going to go ahead and let you start this off. What's typically the first sign of change that somebody, you know, maybe is contemplating, you know, addiction?
Well, in the old days, there was this word that was used quite a bit, and it became rather caustic. It was this word, the D word. It was used, denial. So we learned that that's not going to work when we say somebody's in denial, because then it sets up a confrontational relationship with that individual, even if they do want to change. So now we learned over a period of time, don't use the D word. We're going to use the word pre-contemplation. They don't know whether they have an issue or a problem yet. So what we should do is we meet that individual where they are, not where we think they should be. So another word for that is ambivalence. They're not sure. They don't know whether they have a problem. Meet them there. And then over a period of time, perhaps they can be moved to the next stage, right? So that next stage is contemplation. Now they're going to look at it. They're going to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I do have a problem. Then it's like, okay, can you help me discover that? And maybe I need some assistance. Maybe that other individual will be a mirror to that person, right? And they can help them along. And then once that happens, that, by the way, that movement from pre-contemplation to contemplation, it's not a crack. It's not like a fine line. It's like a chasm. It's like a canyon of difference, almost the Grand Canyon, of the movement from pre-contemplation to contemplation. Next, if they say, okay, you know what? Maybe I do have a problem. They're preparing a plan. So for you and I, that looks like a relapse prevention plan, a recovery plan, maybe going into treatment. Maybe it's doing something different. Maybe they're going to try to abstain on their own, whatever the method they use. They have a plan. Now, they're trying to figure it out. They're analyzing it. They're trying to figure out, is it better to continue to use or will I kind of pursue sobriety? They're trying to figure it out. By the way, at this point, people are still using. They're trying to figure it out. Now, I've got a plan. The other stage is put it into action, whatever that might be. It might be go to the treatment program, go to meetings, work my recovery plan, work my relapse prevention plan. It is the action step where the rubber meets the road when it comes to establishing sobriety. And then you and I both know that last stage maintenance is I've maintained this new behavior that I've been working on for 1 year. And now I've sustained the change for 1 year. And now what I can do is I can choose another compulsive disorder that I want to tackle. Maybe I'm a smoker. Maybe I have a caffeine addiction as well, because a lot of people drink coffee and teas. Or maybe I'm addicted to sugar. And I can now address those compulsive disorders.
You know, it's interesting, because personally, having lived, you know, and being in stage five now, right? I feel like I'm between stage four and stage five, because I'm very active in my management of my recovery. But going back to the beginning and going to, you know, denial, I know that there were many times when I spent, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning praying over the porcelain God, puking my guts up, you know, looking up at the wife and saying, why do I do this to myself? What am I doing right? And I would, you know, have that, you know, that reckoning, if you will, and, you know, I'd abstain for a week or two. Mm. But it was never anything concrete, right? It was okay, well, I wasn't doing it daily, so I should be fine. I just, unfortunately, sometimes I just overindulge. And that overindulge leads to consequences, you know, physically. Then, you know, I recognized that I was starting to accelerate on the drinking, right? I was starting to, and I was realizing that it was affecting externally my life and my environment, my ability to work and be conscious there, my ability to have good relationships with my family.
Yeah.
And also just internally not, you know, not feeling comfortable in my skin anymore, needing something to ease that, whatever it was inside of me. And also recognizing that there was, you know, there was just a huge, you know, mental health aspect to it. I know that, you know, I basically went to this contemplation stage and I admitted myself into ER and I got myself a psychiatrist and I got myself a psychologist. And I thought that that was going to be sufficient. And yet it wasn't intensive enough to the point where I can't control myself anymore. And the therapy that I'm getting now isn't enough because I'm still left to my own vices. It's still, there's still too many hours in the day where I have to figure this out for myself. And to be honest with you, I didn't have the education. I didn't understand what was going on. I just felt, you know, inadequate, inferior, felt, you know, less than because I, you know, hey, I should just be able to stop. I should have that willpower, right? And that became, you know, scary, but it ultimately left me to a point of surrendering. And saying, okay, I need someone to truly get, you know, get a hold of me and to make me become a student of what is going on with me and learn what's happening, get hopefully the medication help that's going to help stabilize me so that I'm not crawling out of my skin, I'm not going batshit crazy. And also, you know, really understand that, you know, hey, this, you know, maybe this isn't just me. This is genetics. This is disposition. It's not so much a character flaw as much as it is a biological flaw in a sense now, right? And it brought me peace. You know, getting to that point brought me peace. So, and that's what in a sense empowered me. It really empowered me to sit there and go, okay, now that I have these tools, you know, I'm willing to make an action plan. I'm willing to really see what this life looks like sober and clean for something longer than a week or two. And it brought massive blessings in my life. And I can't tell you how good it's been, but I realize that when it's all said and done and being in this sober reality, that the community is such a critical part of my success. I've met so many wonderful people, brilliant people that are struggling, and they're all very well to do. They're all highly intelligent. They've all accomplished a lot in their life. And yet we have this common thread of, you know, coping and just, you know, in the improper ways. So I'm thankful for them. I'm thankful for them. I know that it gives me peace. It gives me a resource and it's something that I'm eternally grateful for. And I've got just a bucket loads of friends now, and, you know, great people. And again, I agree that this whole, you know, this whole word addict can kind of be like, you know, can be determined as a bad word, can be kind of called, you know, it's figured to be like a bad word, but we don't tell somebody who has diabetes, they don't say that I am diabetes, right? You know, they say I have it, right? And that's where I've separated myself from that word to basically let people know that, you know, it's not what defines me. It's something that's a disorder in my life that I'm now managing. And I think that's powerful because I think that gives people hope, especially those that are like, you know, my friends think I'm fine. We all go out and party on the weekends and yeah, sure. You know, sometimes they got to drive me home because I'm too inebriated or whatever, but you know, they're doing just fine too. And they're drinking just as much as I am. And nobody seems to be any the wiser, you know? And so what's the problem? But I do know that when the time comes that there's the recognition of negative consequences to what I'm doing, you know, both internally and externally from my use. Right. And I still don't stop. There's definitely something short-circuited inside of me. And especially when it's almost uncanny how you're almost outside of yourself living this reality. It's like you've literally lost control, just, a massive amount of control. And for somebody who accomplishes a lot in their life, for somebody who is, again, the high functioning alcoholic or, the high functioning drug addict, it's almost an oxymoron. How can that be, right? How can I be classified as this if I've been successful and I've started up businesses and I've sold them for $100 million, or I've, I'm a CEO for a major organization, or I've gotten, I've received hundreds of awards and patents in my life, and how could it be that I have this problem, right? If anything, it's a good thing that I have this in my life, because look at what I've done. Who knows? I'm actually scared to think of what I'd be like if I don't maintain this type of lifestyle, right? My life's going to be a dud and everything else. And that's obviously for another conversation, about, myths with sobriety. But I think understanding these stages of change is very important, because again, you have a roadmap, and unfortunately, the whole, phase one is usually, like you say, it's a chasm, right? It's something that it can last a long time, right? I mean, that's usually what happens with addiction. I mean, I don't know anybody who sits there and goes, I started drinking when I was 23, and by 23 and a half, I realized I had an addiction problem, but I needed to quit. I never hear those stories. It's usually a decade, 2 decades,
yeah.
And so, but yeah, I think this was great dialogue, counselor. I appreciate your time this evening.
Well, you're very welcome. It's good to be on.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yes. You touched on one thing right at the end that I wanted to address. It is another myth that you can tell an addict just by looking at them. That's not true. You touched on it. Some addicts and alcoholics are completely high functioning. They're the airline pilot. They're the surgeon. They're the CEO. They're the cashier at Safeway. You're looking at them and you can't tell. They're functioning in society, especially if they're a Delta alcoholic, where you can't tell whether they're intoxicated or not. They have a constant BAC in their blood of 0.01 to 0.02, but they're never going to look like they're intoxicated or inebriated. And that is a myth, that I can look at somebody and tell that they're an alcoholic. No, you can't. They're all around us. In fact, to be honest, the majority of addicts and alcoholics that exist today are highly functional and are highly productive and effective in their families and their businesses and their interactions with people. They just have periods of time that they become ineffective, or they isolate, or they crawl into their cave. And then when they come back out, they go right back to being that high-functioning person. And when do you see them? You're going to see them when they're high-functioning. You're going to see them when they're productive. You're going to see them when they're actually doing their job. So the myth that I wanted to end it in with is that you can look at a person and tell they're an addict or alcoholic, and you cannot. They're you.
Wonderful,
and me.
Mike. Hey,
they can look like us.
Very good. Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike. You have a great evening, and this is the Addicts Advocate. My name is Dusty Dean, and please like and subscribe. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Dusty.